Bickley and Murata, live at Cardinals HQ. This is Cardinals All Access at the OTAs, presented by Courtesy Chevrolet, your exclusive home for Arizona Cardinals football. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Tuesday edition of Bickley and Murata. We are out on the road outside the Oxygen Community Studios at the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center. You heard about 30 minutes of the Monty Williams introductory press conference here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It's still going. It's a lengthy press conference. A lot of ground to cover.
You believe that? Go right back to it, man.
Monty Williams is scheduled to join the program after that, but a lot to unpack there. I like a lot of what I heard. Very thorough answers from Monty Williams. I think he hit on a lot of things that fans want to hear. What were your takeaways from what you heard from Monty?
All of that. I was very, very impressed with his language, with his speaking skills, with his wisdom, with his worldview. They hired a grown-up.
Yeah, they did.
They hired a guy with some experience, and yeah, I mean, I'm not used to this. I'm excited about this. I think this is something that the substance of the guy, it's pretty apparent in this press conference.
Uh-huh. Well, and we'd heard so much, and it's not like Monty Williams was an unknown commodity. I mean, a guy who was a high-profile player in college, had a 9-year NBA career, has been around the league as an assistant coach, a head coach, an executive in the front office. But up until now, it was other people's words that were vouching for or raving about the character of Monty Williams. I agree with you. We saw a real snippet of the person today. And yes, one 30-minute session. But he did answer a lot of those questions.
Yeah, and he made it clear there are really no easy answers. There's a process for everything, whether it's installing a defense that's built to stop 3-point shooters and rebound, says that takes time. Whether it is to, you know, create an offense and a program around Devin Booker, I think he was very realistic and very, you know, he just, like I said, you could feel the experience, you could feel the worldview. And it was just, you could see the difference, and I hate to harp on this, but when you had a head coach, Igor Kokoschkov, whose English was not his first language, these press conferences, they didn't sound like this, through no fault of Igor's, but this guy's going to have a much better time communicating. Let me just leave it at that.
Certainly off to a good start. I agree with you there. I also liked, you know, specific questions about what the offense is going to look like, and not a lot of specific answers because, let's face it, there's not a full roster put together. This team is going to change. It's not going to be the 2018-2019 Phoenix Suns that take the court next year. You got a couple of pieces that you know are going to be here in Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, and he did highlight that. We're going to play through those guys. Mm-hmm. And one of the frustrating things, and I heard from a lot of fans on this, the things that frustrated them about Igor Kokoschkov's year as the head coach was it didn't look like the Suns knew how to use DeAndre Ayton to his strength.
No,
and I think
they didn't.
That will change.
I hope.
I mean, a lot of it's incumbent on DeAndre himself to continue to develop as a pro basketball player.
It's the funniest thing. For instance, Luka Doncic, Trae Young, unanimously selected to the 2018-19 NBA All-Rookie First Team. DeAndre Ayton made the first team, along with Jaren Jackson and Marvin Bagley. Not unanimous like Trae Young or Luka Doncic, but a really good season. I saw a thing on social media today, somebody making a case that DeAndre Ayton statistically could claim to be the NBA Rookie of the Year. Now, I would argue that, because I don't think that's what my eyes tell me. Maybe statistically you could make that argument. Luka Doncic's team ended up doing just as much of nothing as the Suns did. And you've got that. So the point is you can land in a lot of different places on the spectrum of how good you thought DeAndre Ayton was last year. A lot of different places you can land. And I'm at a place, you're at a place, we're all at different places. But there's a lot of room for it. There's a lot of good and a lot of room to improve no matter where you land.
I remember having the discussion and saying the phrase, please tell me you didn't draft DeAndre Ayton to be a screen setter at the top of the key.
I know. You remember that? I remember that.
And, yeah, it was 1 year in working in Philadelphia with Joel Embiid, who is a freakish talent, but that team goes through Joel Embiid. So I think you're going to see a different DeAndre Ayton. Press conference just wrapped up out at Talking Stick Resort Arena. Some photo opportunities. And again, Monty Williams will join us here on Bickley and Murata.
Nice.
As we continue live. We got kind of half and half show today, like the front half of the show. Very Phoenix Suns heavy as we're we'll be joined by Monty Williams. And back half, as we're out here at the Cardinals Training Center in Tempe, we'll continue our coverage of OTAs. DJ Humphries, Jordan Hicks will join us a little bit later on, too.
Now, what's interesting about this NBA All-Rookie First Team is one of the moves that Ryan McDonough was going to do that apparently was vetoed by James Jones was the trade for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to trade for him and draft him.
Yes.
Apparently, as it would appear, James Jones liked Mikal Bridges much, much more. Mikal Bridges is going to be a very good player defensively. He's going to have a long career.
He's already a good player defensively.
Well, that freakish wingspan of his, just it confuses guys. It's hard to go against him when you're dealing with a guy with that kind of reach and wingspan. Did not make the All-Rookie Second Team. That was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Colin Sexton, Landry Shamet, Mitchell Robinson, and Kevin Huerter from the Hawks. Some good rookie players. I think that's the long and short of it. I mean, if you could put together two teams and Mikal Bridges is not part of it, that's a good rookie class.
Well, a lot of the voters, too, will look at just sheer scoring stats. And Mikal Bridges' impact on the Phoenix Suns last year was certainly not at the offensive end. But I don't think he looks out of place offensively.
No. Well,
he's just stronger and more advanced defensively at this point.
And of all the players receiving votes who didn't make either the first or the second team, Mikal Bridges was number one. Followed by Kevin Knox, Jalen Brunson, Alonzo Trier.
You had to do it.
I had to do it. Yeah, so
guess what? If they had an all-rookie defensive team, Mikal Bridges first team.
Yeah. Yeah, so, right, exactly. The point is that you could have had a point guard then, according to Ryan McDonough, and you don't, but you got a player who's pretty good, and it's the James Jones way now. And no one's going to complain after that press conference with Monty Williams.
I would agree. I also found it interesting that he singled out Mikal Bridges because he's there in the building. He was there for the press conference. That he's talked to Devin, Josh, and DeAndre, I think he mentioned via text. But also mentioned Kelly Oubre.
Mm-hmm.
And my eyebrows perked up a little bit at that point. Spoke to Kelly. Kelly Oubre is currently not a member of the Phoenix Suns, restricted free agent, and I know they really like him, and their plan is to bring him back. That is one of the big things to monitor when this whole thing gets underway.
Oh, yeah.
And it gets underway earlier this year, by the way. Did you hear that last week? They changed the start date. It's now 6 p.m. Eastern time on June 30th.
No.
Yeah. So we don't have to wait as long. Now we'll go back down to Talking Stick Resort Arena as we are joined by the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns, Monty Williams, who joins us here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Monty, I'm Vince. My partner is Dan. Congratulations and welcome to the Valley.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, and thank you for having me on your show. It's an honor to not just coach the Suns, but be a part of this community, so thanks.
Yeah, you covered a lot of territory in your press conference, but in this process, with the Suns identifying you as their next head coach, you obviously were coveted. Your name showed up on a couple of different lists. For you personally in this process, what were the boxes you wanted checked from your next employer, and how did the Suns fit that?
Well, I think anybody's looking for alignment and talent, and that's two things that we have here. James, myself, Mr. Sarver, Jeff Bauer, Trevor. We're all aligned in our views, values, what we think will lead to success. And then the talent base, however young, it's a talent base for a young team that you can't look around the league and say there are any teams that are that much better than Devin and DeAndre to start. And Mikal, who's a guy that I thought we had in Philadelphia until draft night, we made a trade in Philly. And so it's a joy for me to be able to connect with him. But those two things, the alignment and the talent base for me, and then the city, I felt like the city was going to be a good fit for my family. I have a lot of children, and the kind of city that I raised my kids in was always going to be a big part of my decision.
Monty, you said a lot of great things at the press conference today, and I think you've got some young kids on your hands that if they get a taste of stability finally, which they've never had here in Phoenix, they could really take off. I want to get your thoughts on that in regards to you and how you view yourself in terms of being a servant leader, number one, and the idea that you have a calling to complete in your professional life.
Well, my servant leadership is based on my faith as a Christian. Jesus Christ is the number one leader, the only superstar for me in my life. And I try to, as best I can, however badly, imitate his servant leadership. And don't always do it well, but that's my goal. As far as a calling is concerned, I just had a level of peace and felt called to come here and be a part of this. Now, it's an NBA job, and I'm paid a lot of money. And so those things are a part of it. But when I prayed about it and got wisdom from a number of people that have always told me the truth, it helped me to make an informed decision to come to Phoenix.
Monty Williams, the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. In this process for the Suns, Monty, we talked a lot on this show and other shows, and my partner mentioned it, instability. But we also talked about the topic of experience. You obviously have vast experience in a lot of different areas of basketball, playing the game, college and pros, coaching it as an assistant and a head coach, front office experience. But focusing on the NBA playing experience, as a head coach, do you find it to be beneficial to have that experience to connect a little bit more with your players?
I do. I think it's, knowing how players feel gives me some foresight when I design practices or talking to them about their bodies or decision making when it comes to, how we're going to play, where they're going to live, all those things. Now, with that being said, that's not the only way. I've had great coaches in my history who didn't play in the NBA. And so I think both avenues, if you will, can lead to success. But for me, being able to relate to players, because I've done it, I know what it's like to play with broken fingers. I know what it's like to play with a torn meniscus. And I know what it's like to be on a one-year contract. My last 4 or 5 years in the league, I was on a one-year contract every year. And so I know what that's like. I know what it's like to be a first-round draft pick. And I know what it's like to take big shots and all that stuff. And I know what it's like to be cut. I have a number of things that have happened to me in my career, and if I would have been better in a certain situation, I might not have gotten cut. So I think the transparency and the timing of when you convey those messages to young players can help them, and that's my goal. I want to help. I don't want to dictate. I want to be able to help our young men become the best versions of themselves on and off the floor.
Monty, you're a real smart guy. You've been in the league a while. You've got real experience. You're really tight with Alvin Gentry, who's seen the best and the worst of Robert Sarver. And I know that you feel really good about where this is right now. This, to me and to a lot of Suns fans, this alignment is the source of the greatest optimism yet. Can you be candid with our listeners and give some insight on why you think the owner is completely committed to doing the right thing in terms of organizational hierarchy, and tell us about that little interface you had with them in Philadelphia when some hard truths were told both ways?
Well, I mean, if you look at the commitment that he's made to me and my family, that's a huge commitment in this day and age. There's coaches around the league that have done more than I have who haven't gotten that commitment. And so for Mr. Sarver to commit to me and my family with the years and finances says a lot about what he wants to do as it relates to the conversations that we had. We just talked and we were both transparent about who we are as people, some of the mistakes that we made. And for me, the ownership that he displayed. Not one time did he throw anybody under the bus. Not one time did he make one excuse. And I just found that refreshing in this day and age where people are on social media just ripping each other up and making excuses. And, you know, you can do two things. You can make excuses or you can make progress, but you can't do both. And for me, that was huge, just being able to talk. And we both had things that we had to admit. And, you know, I have this reputation that's way overblown, just boring. That's just the reality. I don't have much going on other than basketball, church, my family. That's it. And so I've gotten a reputation that just is kind of weird. At the same time, you know, I look at Mr. Sarver and I felt it. He wants to bring this city success. And the craziest, you know, most fans would be kind of weirded out a little bit just based on the history. But Mr. Colangelo was the guy that really pushed me to work for Mr. Sarver. And that said a lot, because most people would think that they don't get along. And that's contrary to what the reality is. And so all of that stuff, along with our conversations and us being transparent about the things we want to be better at, helped me in this decision.
That's really great. Your life was changed tragically after a basketball game in Phoenix, and the NBA community grieved with you. You've got a great support system of your children, and people are familiar with your story. It's heartwarming to hear that you've since been remarried. Without going too deep, and forgive me for being presumptuous to ask you to talk about this, how did that shape you into the coach that you're going to be to these young men who play for the Suns?
Yeah, I can appreciate your question. It's a part of my life, but I'm not going to let it define me. You know, what me and my children have been through the past few years is, to say it's tough or has been tough, doesn't even describe it. And yet, the good Lord has gotten us through a lot, and we still have years to go. We may never be at a point where we feel okay with it, but those lessons that I learned, I'm hopeful that I can transfer and impart some of those lessons and things that I've learned from that to help our guys. I've learned to allow people to help me, because I just needed a lot of help. When you're a doofus like me trying to raise five kids, you need help. And so I was put in a position where I had to rely on other people. You can imagine me going to a doctor's appointment with my kids, trying to figure out where do I sign my name on an application or all those sheets of paper they give you at the doctor's office.
Yeah.
Going to an emergency room at 2 o'clock in the morning because my boy has an infection and can't breathe. That was way over my head. So I just had to rely on a lot of people to help me, and a ton of prayer. And trying not to be perfect all the time. You know, I used to try to grade myself at the end of the day, like, you know, today I got an A or a B or a C, and I was always getting a D in my estimation. And then I just went to pass fail. You know, if they were in bed, they ate, homework was done, didn't smell too bad, I was like, pass. So it was one of those deals, man, where I was like, Mont, you need help. And the first time that God in the Bible said that something wasn't good was when man was alone. And that really impacted me. And so I hope our guys realize how much we need each other, because I definitely need them.
Monty, that was refreshing. Thanks so much for joining us for a few minutes. Really appreciate it. And congratulations again on the job.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you. Monty Williams, the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns, our guest, as he joined us live from Talking Stick Resort Arena. I think a lot of that garners a wow. We'll react to some of that wow coming up. If you subscribe to the Bickley and Marotta podcast, subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's the Bickley and Marotta podcast, brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. We are live from the Arizona Cardinals Dignity Health Training Center in Tempe, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Tuesday edition of Bickley and Murata here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Thanks again to Monty Williams, new head coach of the Phoenix Suns, for joining us. Thanks to the Suns for allowing that to happen.
Definitely thanks to the Suns for making that happen.
Yeah, that was I'm not going to say fun, but it was I could listen to that guy talk for a long time.
He's got depth to him.
Yeah.
He's got real experience. He's got real depth.
Yeah, and different experience, too, and he touched on some of that different takeaways from, obviously, we talked about the press conference, but in the interview he did with us, I think the part that stood out the most, Bick, was you asking him about the process and asking him to shed light, Monty Williams, to shed light on conversations that were had with Robert Sarver. And here was Monty Williams commenting on the level of commitment that the owner of the Phoenix Suns has made to him.
Well, I mean, if you look at the commitment that he's made to me and my family, that's a huge commitment in this day and age. There's coaches around the league that have done more than I have who haven't gotten that commitment. And so for Mr. Sarver to commit to me and my family with the years and finances says a lot about what he wants to do.
I thought that was part of the answer that really stood out. But when it got into more detail, more specifics to Bick about the back and forth in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Here's what Monty Williams had to say. I thought this was fascinating.
We just talked, and we were both transparent about who we are as people, some of the mistakes that we made. And for me, the ownership that he displayed, not one time did he throw anybody under the bus. Not one time did he make one excuse. And I just found that refreshing in this day and age where people are on social media just ripping each other up and making excuses. And, you know, you can do two things. You can make excuses or you can make progress, but you can't do both. And for me, that was huge, just being able to talk. And we both had things that we had to admit.
Yeah, and then at the end of that, he said, "I just felt it." Remember that?
Just felt it. And then
just felt it.
On another tidbit, which I hadn't heard before, on who influenced Monty Williams to take this job.
The craziest, you know, most fans would be kind of weirded out a little bit just based on the history, but Mr. Colangelo was the guy that really pushed me to work for Mr. Sarver. And that said a lot, because most people would think that they don't get along, and that's contrary to what the reality is.
Yeah, well, that goes back to that whole servant mentality leader. Jerry's got that same viewpoint mm-hmm. on everything. Mm-hmm. And he and Monty, they're both deep in their Christian faith, and I could see Jerry doing that. Yeah, listen, there's a lot of things I admire Jerry Colangelo for. His grace under a lot of this stuff is right at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. He doesn't wish any ill for the Suns. To the contrary, he'd do anything for them, mm-hmm. anything. Because he still looks at them as his. You know what I mean?
In a way.
It's got you in.
And I think, you know, in a lot of ways he should.
You have a kid, you get divorced, you're still raising that kid. That's kind of probably how he looks at the Suns.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Kid still is.
Kid's 51. Still living at home.
Still hasn't moved out of downtown Phoenix, and thank goodness for that, right?
That first cut that we played from Monty from the interview where he talked about the level of commitment, as that soundbite was playing, and he's exactly right, and his level of self-awareness is refreshing, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of coaches in this league that have done more than me that haven't got that level of commitment. As he was saying that, I'm looking at you. There's a television screen right above your head, and as he was saying that, on that television screen, I'm looking at the uncomfortable facial expressions of Frank Vogel during his press conference in Los Angeles yesterday. Mm-hmm. And you talk about resonating. Monty Williams arguably doesn't have as impressive a coaching resume as Frank Vogel. And here's Frank Vogel not only getting a 3-year contract, wasn't their first choice, had assistants forced on him who could very easily usurp him for the head coaching job. I asked Monty Williams about what boxes he checked. I mean, this had to be, I don't think he would ever say it, this had to be an easy decision for him.
I don't know about easy. Now I'm sounding like you, parsing words. Yeah, they, yeah, I think maybe. Yeah, maybe when you compare one to the other, especially when you get what he said he got out of Robert Sarver, maybe you do step back and go, this is a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the fact that he came here speaks for itself, if you ask me. But I don't, yeah, I think that maybe it's fair to say that. It doesn't guarantee anything going forward, but this is probably about as optimistic as Suns fans could feel for off the court reasons, leadership reasons,
yes,
in a long time.
Well,
leadership reasons.
And the stuff on Robert Sarver, you know, not throwing anything under the bus, taking culpability for the situation, wanting to change, wanting to bring a title. There are Suns fans that listen to those words,
mm-hmm,
whether they're from Monty Williams or anybody else in that organization, and they roll their eyes when they hear those words. To me, that shows a change of direction. And I guess it boils down to where you are on the optimism scale. Age-old question. Do you believe that people are capable of change?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
I think it's rare, but I do believe people are capable of it. There's others that just dismiss it out of hand, you know?
Yeah.
People can't change. Leopards can't change the spots. People don't change. You are what you are. I don't agree with that. I don't believe that to be true.
I don't believe that at all. I think some people might be incapable of changing, but I don't think that it's that difficult. I think you have to have the right level of humility and self-awareness,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
You have to have the ability to look at yourself honestly, to feel shame,
yeah, Monty
to feel
Williams
humiliation.
Has plenty of those things.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you don't have moments of self-loathing in any way, shape, or form, you're not going to ever change. And that's, I mean, Monty Williams, I couldn't believe how often during that press conference just spoke openly of his own failures without even saying what they were.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I'm so bad at this, and I'm bad at this, and I'm woefully overmatched, and I'm trying to take my kid to the emergency room at 2 a.m. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. I like his
good stuff.
I like this philosophy on parenting, too. I just switched to pass-fail.
Isn't that so great?
As long as you're not auditing the course.
Isn't that
you're
so
good.
Great?
Pass-fail. Have you subscribed to the Bickley and Murata podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's the Bickley and Murata podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. Coming up, Diamondbacks can't generate offense, waste a good start, not a great trip. Start to the road trip. We'll get into all of it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Giving you exclusive coverage of the Arizona Cardinals organized team activities, the OTAs. Bickley and Murata, live from Cardinals HQ, presented by Courtesy Chevrolet, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Weaver is ready at the belt. First pitch. And a drive to center. Back on it goes Dyson, and it is gone. A home run. Reyes a home run to right center field, and he's put Paddock and the Padres on top 2-1 in this game.
I just felt, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but I just felt like in that pitch it just wasn't the right call, and I kind of felt it before I threw it. And it's just a mental error in my mind where I should just step off and kind of gather and either think about it or just, you know, throw something else. And I think I just tried to do too much with it, knowing that the balls are running, and it just spun out of my hand. And good hitter, power hitter, and put the swing on.
Yeah, it's Greg Schulte on the play-by-play of the Friendmill Reyes home run in the sixth inning last night that supplied all the offense for the Padres and all the offense they would need in a 2-1 win, followed by the pitcher that gave up the home run, Luke Weaver, talking about having doubts about the pitch that was called. It was a first-pitch cutter that Reyes, who's quickly becoming a Diamondbacks killer, by the way, he put it over the fence. That sound courtesy of azcentral.com. Diamondbacks lose. They waste a good start by Weaver, who's been really good this year. And I don't know. It's certainly not panic level yet, but I brought this up earlier in the show. And we have a 15-game sample, starting with that devastating loss that dominated our show the next day. That last game, the Sunday afternoon game in Denver against the Rockies, where that big lead evaporated. Archie Bradley came in and blew a 4-run lead. Since that time,
yeah,
the Diamondbacks are 5-10,
mm-hmm,
and there's concerns all over the field, really. Offensively, they're hitting .228 as a team,
yep,
since then. Last night, the offense couldn't get going, and you still see issues like wasting good starts, spotty bullpen work. I'm wondering, I'm not saying it's a fact, but I'm wondering if this 15-game sample is closer to the real Arizona Diamondbacks this year than what we saw prior to
it. I think it is. I mean, that to me is, that would be no surprise if that's what it is. I think the offense is overperformed, and I'm guessing maybe the starting rotation up until now has kind of done the same. I think that both were going to level off, and when they leveled off, you were looking at a 500 team at best. Now, maybe that'll change. Maybe Yasmani Tomas will be called up and start crushing the ball. You know, maybe Taiwan Walker, when he gets back this summer, maybe he'll make a difference. I don't know. Maybe they'll add the right piece. I just think that I don't think this is a slump they're in right now. I think they're just a good team that's not quite there yet. Last night, perfect example. The only run they scratched out was, you know, Jerod Dyson beating out a potential double play, and that was it. And Luke Weaver was terrific, but yeah, it's, and the last thing this baseball team wants to do, we've seen this from previous years, you start scoring 1-2 runs a game, you look boring, and you look really bad and lethargic, and then people don't like watching you or talking about you or anything like that.
And things that were issues 3 weeks ago remain to be issues as well, specifically the Zach Godley spot in the rotation. Torey Lovello puts Zach Godley back in the bullpen again. He got the start on Saturday night. He struggled. They lose to the Giants. They lose the series to the Giants. There's still no clarity. And I'm not expecting, okay, we've identified Zach Godley as struggling in the rotation. We're going to make a change. And the first thing you try to be this long-term solution, it would be foolish to expect that. But the frustration in it is, and that was April 30th. Today's May 21st, and there's still no clarity on that spot. And I know the Taiwan Walker injury, having the setback with the shoulder, that was an unforeseen problem that popped up and obviously threw a wrench in their plans, but they're no closer to figuring out that problem. I mean, that rotation is thin.
Yeah, no, I know. And so what I think is happening here is I don't think that – are you surprised that the team is starting to struggle?
No.
No.
Not surprised, but I did have reason to believe, due to the consistent nature of the offense, that what we were seeing was not a mirage. And I'm not convinced that it is a mirage at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But if – you know, we parsed through that devastating loss to the Rockies and said, what effect will this have on a team? Can you point to a 5-10 stretch right to that game and that being the direct result? No. Certainly didn't help things.
No.
And players that were struggling then are struggling now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. So, I don't think that they are psychologically beaten down by that loss in Colorado. I think it's just probably the time when a lot of things started to fall apart. The bullpen, most notably, that particular day. And so, you know, I think this is just what I kind of feared of this baseball team. I was very skeptical of their of the prolonged moments when they looked like a really good team. I remember coming in here after, I forget what game it was, and I was really suddenly optimistic because this ensemble of very versatile players they have, they kept hitting. Mm-hmm. And they kept hitting. And at that point in time, Eduardo Escobar was on fire. Ketel Marte was on fire. And Christian Walker was still pounding the ball. There's a lot of average on this baseball team. Uh-huh. So unfortunately, I'm not that surprised.
Yeah. You mentioned Yasmani Tomas. I don't know if it was tongue-in-cheek or not, but he did have 4 home runs and 8 RBIs yesterday.
Well, and talk about that.
5-for-6 with 4 runs scored, 4 dingers, and he drove in 8.
Okay, should you give him a shot, or did they
He's not even on the 40-man roster.
So what was that all about? You hit 4 home runs in a game, that's no joke, but the team hit 10 the same day.
Mm-hmm.
So was the wind going out at 30 miles an hour? Were they facing position players trying to pitch?
Tacoma didn't have any home runs, so I don't think the wind was only blowing in the bottom half of the inning.
Well, so, yeah, so four home runs, doesn't that bear some examination? Shouldn't you look into this?
I mean, Kevin Krohn is down there as well. He's got 23 home runs. He's leading all of all of professional baseball in a couple of categories. The numbers are inflated. I mean, if you look at the box score, and a lot of weird stuff happens in Reno, Nevada, everybody except for one player in Reno's lineup had two hits or more. Tomas had five. Matt Caesar had four. He hit for the cycle. LeCastro, Leyba, Krohn, and Juniel Caracudo had three hits apiece.
Yeah.
They had 25 hits and 25 runs. So to answer your question, no, it does not. It does not deserve examination because Yasmani Tomas hit.
Okay.
He's been hitting the ball well since he's been down there.
Okay.
His third year down there.
But here's what I'm saying. If you were to poll an average Diamondback fan right now, what would you rather talk about? Last night's 2-1 loss in San Diego where the team was boring, or do you want to talk about Yasmani Tomas and four home runs in one game? They're going to say Yasmani Tomas. That's all I'm saying. Because the guy's getting paid a boatload of money, and he just had a game. That's like scoring 40 in a basketball game, going deep four times. So if you can hit four home runs in a minor league game.
I think that's like scoring 60.
Okay, maybe you're right. Yeah. It is kind of like scoring 60. If you can hit four bombs in a minor league game, why aren't you getting a look?
Let me say this. Jimmer Fredette averaged 36 points
in
a game
China.
In China.
Okay,
that's why
I get
it doesn't
it.
Deserve a look.
Okay. I that seems to me to be real, real closed-minded about maybe what he might be able to give you. And I am not a Yasmani Tomas fan, but four homers in a game? Are you kidding me?
All right, coming up, the Bickley Blast straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata. We're live at the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.